Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
The Red Cottage by Hannah Linder. She forgot she loved him. He would die to make her remember. Meg Foxcroft has never minded the tattling village gossip or her uncle's ill-tempered rebukes. After all, she has Tom McGwen, and one day they will build their own cottage, paint it red, and live a wonderful life. But then the unthinkable happens. Meg is attacked, her uncle's apothecary shop goes up in flames, and when she wakes up in the arms of an eloquent lord, she remembers nothing, not even her own name. In a frantic race against time, Tom plunges into dangerous water, bent on sheltering Meg from harm and discovering who wants her dead, even if she despises him, even if it's now the handsome lord she casts her smile upon. As danger swells and truth comes crashing around them, Meg must confront the past and decide who she trusts and loves before the enemy makes the final strike.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm talking with Hannah Linder, who resides in the beautiful mountains of central West Virginia. And welcome to my show, Hannah.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
I'm excited to talk to you because I love that you have romance, suspense, and you write historical. So I love that. I mean, I think just having romance, suspense, and then the faith element, and you have the faith element too, is enough. But you have to add in the history part. So what made you decide you wanted to add suspense to your historical romance books?
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of realized from a really young age that I have to write murder and suspense in my books. And I remember I was probably 14 or 15, and I thought, I'm going to write a rom-com, and it's just going to be really chill. It's going to be fun and lighthearted and all this stuff. And about partway through the novella, I started adding in, like, these villains and then this kidnapping, and it just got really dark really fast. And I was like, I think that I'm meant to write things that are a little more edgy and not so cheesy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't add the historical part to it. I feel the same way. I'm like, I'm writing it, and I'm like, what? Well, they're not in danger. I got to do something to keep this plot moving because I just can't think of enough to have them. But to me, the conflict, you know, they have the conflict with their relationship, but it's in the backdrop of they're trying to solve this mystery. And I have several friends who write wonderful straight romances. But sometimes I'm reading them and I keep thinking, okay, where's the dead body? Who's going to shoot at
us? Yes,
where's the mystery to solve? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So now your time period is Regency, right?
Yes.
So what attracted you to that time period for the historical era that you wanted to write about?
So probably, I remember when I was first introduced to kind of like a mental image of what the Regency era was when I was probably like 14 and I was having a sleepover with a friend and we watched Pride and Prejudice. And we were both just, you know, in that really like giggly teenage girl stage. And mm-hmm. We were just swooning over Mr. Darcy, and we just kept talking about it. And it's like, it was one of those movies that you watch it, and it like forever changes your personality because it was just so impactful. And so after that, several years later, I thought, you know, I would like to write a book that feels like that movie. And at that point, I didn't even know it was called The Regency Era. I didn't know anything about the historical facts, details, hadn't done any research, nothing. And so I started writing the book just kind of like off the cuff, and then later had to, of course, go back and rewrite it and do my research and all that. But yeah, it's been a really fun time period. I feel like it's really elegant and romantic in its nature. Like, you can't say like the Regency era without having like pretty pictures come in your mind.
Yeah. No, that's so true. I mean, it's one of my favorite. Of course, Jane Austen fan, just read all her books and then other Regency authors as well. And yeah, I mean, it's a fun time period, I think, to write about. I think you can have a lot of fun. And then you add the intrigue to it. So how do you make sure that your mystery suspense elements are like true to that time period? Do you have to do like extra research for that, or is it just the idea, that you can just fit it in there?
Yeah, so I usually, depending on the nature of the plot, I have to do more or less research. But I kind of from the get-go try to build my plot around the murder mystery somewhat. And so yeah, I kind of just drop in the rest around the murder mystery.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's good. I mean, I often start with I don't write historical. I write contemporary, just to remind my listeners. But I often start with with the mystery, and then I build, what is the mystery? What are they trying to solve? And then build it around there as well. So now, do you write everything all together, or do you write in layers? Like you write your first draft with just the mystery. Do you go back in and layer in the more setting details or more romantic details, or does everything just come out at once?
Yeah, I definitely am the type of writer who just starts with scene one and just goes in chronological order from there. And I'm also very like I hear so many different ways that people do it, and it's fascinating to me how different people's mind
Yeah.
works and how they can organize it. I remember one writer friend told me one time that they'll write every single scene like in a different order, and then at the end they'll piece them all together. And I'm like, oh, my mind cannot wrap around that. Like I could never do that.
Yeah, me
But
either.
yeah, I definitely start at the beginning and then go all the way through. And I try really hard as I'm writing it to get it as close to being like I don't necessarily like aim for a messy first draft. Like I try to make it as
Okay.
tight as I can the first time through. So.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that we learn as we write. I mean, you've written several books. I've written several books. I mean, I feel like that later books should be a little easier to write because we shouldn't have to go back and, like my first book, go back and add stuff. Like my first books, I have to go, oh, right, they need to fall in love. I have them together, but I need to add a few little more tender scenes, to make that happen on it,
Yeah.
little break scenes, while they're running for their lives kind of thing. So, yeah, fun stuff. Now, do you write, as I know in your bio, you talks about you play a lot of instruments. Do you write any of those into your book? Do any of your hero heroines or side characters play any of the instruments that you yourself play?
Not necessarily. I've had a few characters play like the pianoforte, and maybe occasionally, like in a tavern scene or whatever, I'll throw in like a stringed instrument. But no, that's an interesting question, and that's one that I've never really gotten before. But that is a fun idea to maybe in the future have it be a bigger part of the character's personality to have them play one of the instruments that I play.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd have to make it period specific. I don't know if they had ukuleles. I mean, that's one of your instruments back in the Regency period, but I'm sure you could come up with something that would be similar to that. Anyways, just a fun thought. I mean, like, I have cats, and I've thrown some of my cats into my stories, which has been kind of fun because some of them have had like outsized personalities, and I'm like. And they've gone over the rainbow bridge, like they say. And so I'm like, oh, I'll honor them and throw them in my book sometimes. So I'm always curious about instruments. I don't really play any instruments. So, I mean, I did, but we don't need to go down that track. Okay. So we're almost out of time, Hannah, but I always love to ask, when do you find time to write? Are you a full-time writer? Do you have a job? How do you fit writing into your life?
So what I do, and if I found that if I don't do this, then lots of times the whole day will go by and it just won't get done. But
Yeah.
I as soon as I wake up in the morning, I go and grab my computer and sit in bed or on my couch, and before I even eat breakfast or anything, I'll get down at least one scene. And then, I'll start my day and begin my day job, which is book cover design. So I work for publishers and then individual authors, designing book covers. So that's a lot of fun. But yeah, and then sometimes on the weekends I'll have like a writing Saturday where I'll just write all day and get a lot of writing done. So.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I would do it full time if I didn't. I mean, I would do it like first thing. I would do it full time if I could, but hey, one day. And yeah, we have to have aspirations, right? One day I will just be able to write full time. But now I love to write first thing in the morning, but since I'm working in a school, of course I can't do that 'cause I have to be at the school first thing. So now I have to write in the evening, and I found that I can make myself do that. The transition wasn't as hard as I thought it was, or thought it would be. So
Yeah.
I'm
Well,
really glad about that.
actually, I felt like, because before I started my business and I was in college and working in public full time, I would do that too, and I would write in the evenings. And honestly, like, I felt like I was much more inspired in the evening time because it's like all the interactions that you experience all day long and all the different things that you've had time to think about, I felt like was motivating and like fuel for my writing. And when you first wake up in the morning, you're still kind of like in that groggy, like, what day is it stage. And
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
it's a lot harder to get in the creative mood, I feel like.
Yeah, it can be, but but I think we have to. I think what you said was good, that we have to have that consistency so that we can get the words done and out there. And otherwise, like you said, if you don't do it first thing, you don't do it. And I can't do it first thing, but I have been pretty disciplined of doing it like in the evening or like right after dinner for like get one scene done, like you said, and that's usually been pretty good, gotten some stuff done. So yay. Well, I've really enjoyed talking with you. Unfortunately, we are out of time, so thank you so much for sharing about your writing and your writing journey on my show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Sarah. This was fun.
Now an excerpt from The Red Cottage by Hannah Linder. May 1818, Juleshead Village, North Cornwall, England. We shall get murdered for this. Frigid water numbed her legs as Meg Foxcroft abandoned the rowboat and plunked knee-deep into moonlit water. She laughed, out of breath from the shocking cold, as she waited for the rocky shore. Hurry up! Not sure what it matters now. It happens to matter a great deal. It is dreadful enough I have lost my shoes, let alone the hour. Before she could scamper up the rocks, his freckled hand snatched her waist. They pulled her back. Tom! Let him grumble. You are not the one who shall be forced to endure scolding an entire fortnight. A wave swayed them back and forth, seeping the water higher up her dress, more evidence that would be impossible to hide from Uncle. Now let go of me, you terrible fool. I would not call terrible the hands that hold your life, lass. He dragged her deeper, and she squealed. You would not dare. Recant your words. Tom! Do it, or down ye go. You are every ounce of absurdity. If I should come dragging home in the middle of the night, drenched without nary a stocking, he shall accuse us to no end, and the village shall murmur for weeks. With a roaring laugh, he dunked her beneath the water, coldness engulfing her the same time her heartbeat thrummed in a mix of delight and fury. She broke the surface with a gasp, swiveled in his arms, raised a hand to slap him. But he caught her fingers, as he always did, and his lips crashed into hers. Surprise jolted her. He tasted of salt and power and unbearable sweetness, like the confections Uncle was always warning would make her sick. Her chest hammered, her mind swam, smoothly, softly, like the waves they stood in, until the only thing she understood was the red stubble on his cheeks, the tickle of wet hair on the back of his neck, the familiar firmness of his muscled arms. Ye are the one who is impossible. He pulled back too soon and did as she'd asked, as if she truly wanted to go home. As if she ever did. Silhouetted vessels bobbed on the water, and the foggy night breeze smelled of fish and sea and distant chimney smoke, She wrung out the skirt of her dress, then her hair, while he yanked off his dripping linen shirt and tossed it over his shoulder. Ready? She nodded, but she wasn't. His fingers laced with hers. In the shadow of warehouses and decaying buildings and quiet alleys, they slipped through the village with neither lantern nor shoes, the cobblestone gritty against her feet. In the morning, Uncle would tell her how many shillings a new pair would cost. He would ask how she could be so reckless and where she had lost them, but she wouldn't tell him the sea had stolen them away, or that she had slipped into the night again with Tom, that they had taken out the fishing boat, that they'd found a quiet shore somewhere, built a sand cottage in the moonlight, laughed so hard her stomach hurt, watched the stars, lost time. Uncle wouldn't understand. Neither did anyone else. But the night held things no one could see in the day. This was theirs, forbidden or not, and though people whispered now, one day she and Tom McGwen would build a cottage not made of sand. She'd plant lilac bushes outside the windows, and he would paint the outside a bright and brilliant red. They wouldn't run about barefoot anymore. No one would call him Tomboy, nor her an unruly hoyden. Because she would wear proper dresses, ones that hadn't been patched and sewn from all her adventures. And he would smoke a pipe every evening from his upholstered chair. Together they'd entertain the most esteemed villagers, including the clergymen, and not even tattling Mrs. Wally would find blunder in them. A sigh gathered at her throat when they reached the weathered green-painted apothecary shop. The bowed windows reflected orange street light. "I'll be by to see you in the morning. Save me a bit of bread pudding if you think of me." If she thought of him, she thought of nothing else. Sadness choked her, an unprepared pierce of longing, and too many other things to count. He should not have kissed her tonight. In all the years she'd known him, he had only done so on the rarest occasion. Always when she was unprepared, or when she was angry at him for some trivial thing, or when he was leaving, like now. "I want to go with you." He shook his head and grinned, messing with the wet hair draped across her shoulder. But it was in him, too, in his eyes, a reluctance to walk away. In all these years, he had never departed Jules' head. Neither had she. "It will be fine," he whispered, glancing at the window to make certain her uncle did not stir from inside. "I shall be back in a fortnight or sooner." "Unless they ask you to stay." "They won't." "What if they do?" "You worry too much, lass. And you not enough." He pulled her under the arched doorway, finger over his lips, gesturing her to be silent. "Go on before that old goat comes out here waking the world with his uproar." Tears stung. She was ridiculous for them, she knew, but they flooded over anyway, in testament to her fears, and she closed her eyes when his calloused finger thumbed them away. "Ach, but there is a bit of softness in that ferocious heart of yours. Do not tease me. What do you want me to do?" "I want you to..." She glanced at his face, the splendor of every handsome angle and hard chisel of his jaw. Then his eyes, blue, alive, like the sea early in the morning when the ripples twinkled with burning sunlight. Then his lips. Her heart lurched in wild anticipation. Leaning into him for the first time, she swallowed his neck with her arms, kissed him, and pulled back so fast she had to fight for air. "I want you to leave before Uncle catches us. Go." He laughed, but stilled her hand before she grabbed the door. "Meg."
"What?"
"When I come back, I'm going to marry ye." Blood rushed to her face and her cheeks warmed with the same velocity as her soul. Before she had a chance to answer, he disappeared into the night and fog.
"Tom, wait."
He was a fool because Uncle would never allow them matrimony. Not when Tom was still without his own fishing boat, and they were both penniless and still as far away from their red cottage as Jules' head was to the moon. But as she eased open the door with quiet steps, ecstasy raced her heart. Her stomach fluttered despite all the reasons it should be sinking. "Marry ye." His low voice, with its soothing playfulness and Scottish lilt and clumsy gentleness. He was wonderful. Whether he married her in a fortnight when he returned, or in 20 years when Uncle finally relented and Tom had his boat, she would wait. Something creaked. Meg froze halfway across the dark shop, her hand grazing the front counter. Had Uncle heard and awakened? But the noise had not come from the open doorway on the left side of the room, which led to Uncle's private office, their small parlor, and 2 bedrooms. Instead, it had come from the rear counter. air trapped in her lungs the same time a shadow darted along the shelves. Bottles crashed, glass busted. An overwhelming fragrance of herbs and earthy mixture struck the air in an aromatic warning. Hunkering, Meg skittered across the room in her dripping bare feet. Thieves had broken inside more than once, usually a desperate farmer with a sick wife or child, or a village street urchin eager to swipe something for trade. But never in the middle of the night, not when someone was home. Whoosh! Another shadow lunged in front of her, blocking the doorway. Panic spiked. She stumbled back, screamed, just as the figure lifted something over his head and swung. Wood and metal cracked her forehead. Uncle! Her body smacked the floorboards. The blackness deepened. Uncle, help!
Use the gun. Too loud.
Slamming, thumping, bottles and vials and bowls busting.
Light it up.
A groan ripped from her throat. She rolled once, pushed up on her elbows, grabbed a cabinet and pulled herself up.
Rumbled, the girl!
A second blow struck the back of her skull, battering her with pain. Her mind flashed too many things at once. The crumbling sand cottage, salt water on her face. The boat rocking, rocking, rocking. Tom. Blackness sucked her under before she could cry his name.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.